morning. Mentioned yesterday a sefer called Eldad Hadani. So today we will learn one of the many versions of that sefer. There are. It's a very old sefer. I said it's 1,000 years old, actually more than 1,000 years old, and exists in several different versions. Basically the same idea. The sefer is in the form of an introduction and a question and an answer. A question addressed to Rav Tzemach Gaon, ben Chaim, apparently, according to historians, there were three. Gaon was the Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel in the period before the Rishonim. The last Gaon was Rav Hai Gaon, who's better known. There were three Gaonim named Rav Tzemach Gaon, but historians believe that the one referred to here is Rav Tzemach Gaon ben Chaim, who was the Gaon of Sura from 884 to 890. So this story occurred during his time. This person, Eldad, came from somewhere that sounds like Ethiopia. And he told a story that in the days of Yeravam, after the northern kingdom, when the northern kingdom first split from Yehuda, Yeravam said, let's go to war against Yehuda. And his advisors told him that the strongest warriors are from Shevet Dan. So he went to Shevet Dan and he said, let's go fight with our brothers, Bnei Yehuda. And they told him, we swear by the life of our father Dan that we will not fight with other Jews. And they decided to go to war with Yeravam instead. And Hashem saw that their intentions were good. They didn't want to really fight with anyone. So he gave them the idea to flee. And first they picked up and fled to Egypt. And then they said, what are we doing in Egypt? It says in the Torah not to go back to Egypt, which we had a shiur on. So they then wanted to go to Edom and Ammon, but Torah says not to fight with them either. So they eventually fled to Eretz Cush, and they found a beautiful, fertile land with gardens and orchards and fields and vineyards. And at first, they were not welcome there, but then they made a covenant with them, and in the end, the people of Cush paid tribute to them, and they multiplied. In later years, possibly, it seems, after the 10 tribes were exiled, the tribes of Naphtali, Gad, and Asher came and joined them in this land. He goes on and describes that they're very wealthy. They have gold and animals, and they plant, and they live in tents, and their land is a area of travel of 200 days in each direction, or I guess in two directions. So it's a square, 200 days travel by 200 days travel. And they have a king, and his name is Adiel ben Michael from Shevet Asher, and he punishes with the Arba Misos Beis Din, Skila, Srefa, Hereg, and Chenek, which is significant because as Tzemach Gaon points out in his answer, the word Chenek doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah as one of the Arba Misos Beis Din. It's only in Torah Sheval Peh that we know that. And since they claim to have left Eretz Yisrael centuries before the Mishnah was written, it gives credence to our Torah Sheba'al Peh that they have the same Arba Misos Beis Din that we have. He then says that we mentioned this yesterday, descendants of Moshe Rabbeinu live by a river called the Sambation, and they're known as the tribe of Yanus, from the word that means to flee, because they fled from Avodah Zarah. And this river surrounds, it's, this river surrounds an area that is 3 months' travel in each direction. And they live in houses and palaces. They have no non-kosher animals, no non-kosher birds there, not no flies, no gnats, no mosquitoes, no lice, no nothing unpleasant of any kind. Their flocks give birth twice a year. And they are Balei Emunah, Balei Torah, Balei Mishnah, Balei Talmud. But they don't have any of the names of the Chachamim that we have because they left before that. So when they learn, they just say, Yoshua bin Nun said in the name of Moshe, in the name of Hashem. And that's everything in their Gemara is like that. Everything in their Torah Shabbat Peh is like, Yoshua bin Nun said in the name of Moshe, in the name of Hashem. Approximately 890. They speak only Lashon HaKodesh. They have halachos of Yayin Nesach and Shechita and Trefos, much stricter than ours. They are Tahorim, Tzadikim, and Hasidim. They don't take oaths in the name of Hashem. Then goes on like that, describing them. They have, and very wealthy, very, very well off. They all live 220 years. No child ever dies before his father. Actually, he didn't say they all live 120 years. They live very long lives, many of them 120 years, and no child ever dies before his father. They all see many generations of descendants. So they say that somebody, a tzaddik, came from these four tribes, and he said he's from Sheva Dan, and he describes how this person Eldad had left on a business trip and on a ship and was captured by pirates and sold to cannibals in Ethiopia, but eventually there were two of them. The other one was more appetizing looking, so he got eaten first. And then eventually this Eldad was redeemed, was bought from the cannibals by somebody from the tribe of Issachar, who lived in mountains on the coast, and they learned Torah night and day, unlike some of the other tribes that he described before, who are warriors. Tribe Issachar never fight with anybody. They live peacefully, and they're in an area that's 10 days walk by 10 days walk. They have flocks. Nobody does any averos there. And they have a leader whose name is Nachshon. And they also have the Arba Misos Beis Din, and they speak Lashon Kodesh and Persian and Lashon Kedar, which could be Arabic. Not clear.
Does it actually say Ethiopia, or it says Kush at this
point? In this Sefer, it says Kush. We're going to see also this morning another Sefer about this subject who refers to it as Ethiopia. He describes it also as Eretz Chavila Asher Sham HaZahav, which is referred to in Sefer Bereishis, that place. And then he says the Bnei Zvulun live in a place called Har Priyan and Shevet Ruvain, on the next mountain over, and they live in peace. Shevet Ephraim and half of Shevet Menashe live in mountains opposite Mecca. He says the land of the prophet.
Opposite.
Mecca. The land of the prophet of the Ishmaelim, which is called Mecca. And Shevet Shimon and the other half of Menashe live in the land of the Kedarim, 6 months travel from Yerushalayim, and they are like the sand on the beach. So that's the background.
He's got tribes going in very different directions.
Correct. Which we'll see also in the other Sefer that we will look at, points out they were exiled, different tribes were exiled at different times. Eventually we talk about the exile of the 10 tribes, but the Navi describes the three waves of exiles. So why would you expect them all to be in the same place? Among other reasons why they would be in lots of different places, we'll see.
What I find so interesting is that their tribe identity is so maintained.
Yeah.
The way it describes them, no right. mixing together or anything.
That,
like, we haven't been so good about that, but
well, if they were exiled to different places at different times,
yeah.
would not be surprising mm-hmm. that
so
they would
all appear to be tzaddik, which is and unusual.
That's also true, because remember that they were exiled because they were Rishayim, but I guess they took the message to heart, and
mm-hmm.
they're all tzaddikim. So the people of Kiruan, which is in Tunisia, asked Rabbeinu Tzemach Gaon in Bavel about this story and about this person. Does he believe it, what this person is reporting?
Mm-hmm.
And they describe how they tested him. He speaks only Lashon HaKodesh, but he has words that we've never heard for various things. Mm-hmm. A dove is called a tintera, and a bird is called a rekat, and so on. And they say that they tested him several times, different times. They would ask him, what's this? They would show him things, mm-hmm. and he would always say the same thing. Like if he was making it up, you'd expect him to forget and say different things. And, mm-hmm. and he taught them, and Sefer goes on for many pages, with Hilchos Shechita, Halachos of Shechita and Trefos, that he taught them. And they wrote it all down. They sent it to Rav Tzemach Gaon to see how this compares to our Halachos of Shechita and Trefos. Trefos means animals that have certain wounds that make them not kosher. We use the word treif to mean not kosher, but really treifa is a specific type of not kosher. It's a kosher animal that has certain types of injuries. So they sent this all to Rav Tzemach Gaon. They also mention in their letter, besides all of these halachos that he taught them, that they want to see what Rav Tzemach Gaon will say about them, that Eldad HaDani reported that on the night that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they heard hundreds of miles away. They heard a loud noise, and in the morning there was a river where there had never been a river before, and it was tossing stones and boulders and sand all over the place. This would go on for 6 days of the week, and on Shabbos it would stop. But a cloud would come down, and nobody could cross this river. We talked about it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like the Sambation, that, and he says that they call it the Sambation. And
he says, on Shabbos?
When Shabbos would start, this cloud would come, and in place of the river was impassable 6 days a week. On Shabbos, when it was theoretically passable, but a cloud would come and prevent anybody from passing it. And so that was one of the things that he told them. So Rav Tzemach Gaon answers to the people of Kiruan, and he says that regarding this person, Eldad HaDani, so he said, I actually heard before from Rabbana Yitzchak ben Mar and Rabbana Simcha, two rabbis in Bavel, that they also met this person, and some of the things he says are consistent with the words of the Chachamim, and some of them seem fantastic. He says that we have a slightly different tradition about what happened to the Bnei Dan. Not that they ran away at the beginning of the Northern Kingdom, but rather at the end of the Northern Kingdom, when Sancheirav exiled the tribe of Zvulun in the eighth year of Achaz. Achaz was the father of Chizkiah, who we've talked a lot about, and the end of the Northern Kingdom was in the days of Chizkiah. But in the eighth year of King Achaz, approximately 264 years after the building of the Beis HaMikdash, when the Bnei Dan saw that the end was near for the Northern Kingdom, they fled. And he says that Chazal say that there were 10 exiles, 4 at the hands of Sancheirav, 4 at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, 1 by Vespasian and 1 by Hadrian. That's after the second Beis HaMikdash, Vespasian and Hadrian. spot. Sheva Dan is never mentioned among those who were exiled because they left on their own. He says, that which Eldad said, that the Bnei Moshe are surrounded by this river Sambation, he says, that's true, it's in a Medrash. Mm-hmm. So there was such a tradition. I didn't come across that Medrash. There are Midrashim that are lost, or maybe I overlooked it, not sure which. But he says, regarding the fact that there are some differences between what he says and our traditions, both in halacha and as far as the halachos of Shechita they describe, which are very close to our halachos, and as well as his historical traditions, he says, don't be surprised about that, because first of all, we have lots of machlokas in Torah, and people in, you know, between the Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi, they understand things differently. So why wouldn't you expect there to be some differences between the Bavli and the Ethiopian Talmud as well? And furthermore, considering all of the trials and tribulations that this Eldad went through, being kidnapped and sold as a slave to cannibals and escaping, and you could expect him to forget some things too. And so maybe, so either they had some different traditions, but that shouldn't bother you because Ashkenazim and Sephardim, he doesn't say that because they didn't have Ashkenazim and Sephardim in those days like we do now, but Ashkenazim and Sephardim have some different traditions, right? So why can't the 10 lost tribes have some different traditions too? Or Eldad Hadani just forgot some things over time. That is one version of the Sefer Eldad Hadani. That's the whole thing. And it said, again, the Rav Tzemach Gaon referred to here was the head of yeshiva in Sura from 884 to 890. So it gives you a rough time frame of when this occurred.
Is there any comment on the color of their skin? Because,
you know, not in that Sefer. Not there.
The Ethiopians today are very dark. It's not like
including Ethiopian Jews, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So is this saying that he accepted this as truthful?
He accepted his...
all the tribes?
Well, there was just this one person who came. No, he wasn't asked to paskin about specific people. One person came and told this story, and they asked him, do we believe this story? And he said, yes, we believe this story. He wasn't being asked, not like the Rabbanut in Israel that had to paskin on the Ethiopian Jews who came, and they paskined whatever they paskined. He wasn't being asked to paskin halacha on specific people. He was just being asked, do we believe this story? And he said, yes, we believe this story. That's all. Fast forward about 800 years to the 1600s. We've mentioned before Rav Menashe ben Yisrael passed. Every time we've mentioned him, it's been in the context of a sefer called Nishmas Chaim, which I refer to as everything you want to know about the neshama and didn't know to ask. It's like an encyclopedia about the neshama. So he also wrote a sefer called Mikveh Yisrael. He lived in Amsterdam. He was of Spanish descent. This was in the 1600s after Jews had been expelled from Spain. He lived in Amsterdam. And he was, and the sefer has an introduction, which is a long and incredible story about, takes place in the year 1644. Says that a Spanish Jew came to Amsterdam, and he told a story, it's a long story, about being kidnapped and being saved and seeing, being taken various places, many of which are very difficult to identify from the Spanish names spelled in Hebrew. But essentially, he claims to have been taken to Hebrew-speaking people, and again, raises questions of, did he encounter the 10 lost tribes, and where are they? And are the American Indians the 10 lost tribes? Remember, this is in the 1600s. People are very fascinated by the New World. And it seems that in this person's travels, he came across the American Indians, and some of them were Hebrew-speaking. So Rav Menashe ben Yisrael was asked, again, do we believe this story? Well, they were Sephardim, so. So he says, in order to evaluate this, the truthfulness of this story, we would have to know where the Indians in the New World came from. And that's impossible to know. There's no hint in Torah, Nevi'im, or Ksuvim of anybody living in the place that we now call America. In fact, nobody ever heard of them at all before Cristobal Columbus and America Vespucia and Don Fernando Cortez. It's always interesting to see these names in Hebrew. Right? He says, before these explorers, nobody ever heard of this place or of the people living there. And he says, and this is interesting, considering, as I mentioned, that he wrote a sefer about so much information about the neshama. He says, I've never in my life written anything unless I clearly understood it. Unless I felt that I clearly understood it. And now you're asking me to speculate about the origin of the American Indians, and I'm going to do it because I love you and I want to try to make, you know, I love you, the Jewish people, and I want to try to do the best I can do for you. He clearly was very well read in secular history, as he refers to many books, some of which we've heard of, like Pliny, Roman historian, and lots of others that we haven't heard of. So he says, I will discuss all the places where the 10 tribes might be. So first he goes through various theories about where the American Indians came from, theories from secular books of his time. And one theory is that they were people who traveled from Carthage. Carthage was in modern-day Tunisia on the southern coast of the Mediterranean. And he says that, I'm very skeptical about this, because he says that the people in Carthage, that the Carthaginians were white and the Indians aren't white. So he says, I'm very skeptical about that. He says, there's another theory that the inhabitants of New Spain and Peru are descendants of Ophir, the son of Yoktan, the son of Aver. Aver mentioned in the Torah. We start the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Aver. So Aver had a son named, Aver was a great-grandson of Noah. He had a son named Yoktan. And according to this theory, the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico is named after their ancestor Yoktan. And Ophir is Peru, or Peru is Ophir, but the letters reversed. Aleph, Pei, Resh, Pei, Resh, Aleph, Peru. He says, I don't buy this either, because Ophir, mentioned in Tanakh, is the place where Shlomo Melech got his gold. He says, I find it very hard to believe that Shlomo Melech would send ships all the way to America to get gold when there's gold much closer to Israel. And furthermore, the Navi says that Shlomo HaMelech's ships sailed from the port of Etzion Gaver. Etzion Gaver is modern-day Eilat. And from Eilat, you don't sail to America. From Eilat, you sail to India and the Far East. So he says, I'm extremely skeptical about this theory as well. He says, rather, the original Indians were, without doubt, the 10 lost tribes. And he says that and afterwards, people came from many other countries and also settled in the New World before the Spanish, quote unquote, discovered it. People from all over the nations from all over the world also traveled to the New World, but the first inhabitants, I'm correct that. He's going to say that the Indians, what we today call Native Americans, are not descendants of the 10 lost tribes. Rather, he's saying the first inhabitants of the North and South America were the 10 lost tribes, he says. How did that come about? He says Sancheirib exiled the Jews to to Ashur, to Assyria, to Iraq. But they wanted, as Yitzi pointed out, they wanted to be from. And so they said, this is not a good place for us. We need to go find somewhere else. And they kept wandering east. Some reached India. And we know today there are tribes in India that claim to be descendants of the Ten Lost Tribes. And some continued wandering east till China. And from China, it's not very far to America. And he has some interesting, I mean, it's true, you could travel Siberia. North. And he even mentions a place called Irkutsk, which doesn't sound like the same Irkutsk we know today that's between China and Alaska. But some of his geography is not quite consistent. He refers to a place called Greenland and a place called Labrador, which he says is not very far from India. Of course, we know Labrador is very far from India. He's clearly talking about the same Greenland because he says it's near the North Pole. All right, so he didn't quite have the geography right. But it is true, it's not very far from China to America if you travel north and across the Aleutian Islands. And as historians claim, America was originally settled. They just have, not historians, anthropologists rather, because there is no recorded history about this. So he says, and he brings Psukim from Yeshaya and Yirmiah that refer to Jews being exiled to the far islands. And he says that that's what these Psukim are referring to, is their America is made up of many islands, which is partially true because the first part of America that was discovered was the Caribbean islands. You'd think there were a lot of islands, and
it's a long journey.
True, it's been a long time. It's been a long time. He says it happened step by step. He says that a tombstone was found somewhere in the New World. It's not clear exactly where, with Hebrew writing on it, and it's not surprising. Because some of the 10 lost tribes made their way to America, and not surprising that there would be a tombstone. He says that among the tribes, among the Indians found in various places, there are those that practice bris milah. There are those that tear kriya, that tear their garments when they hear bad news or when somebody dies. There are those that keep various forms of taras mishpacha, of laws of family purity. There are those that sanctify the 50th year. There are those that have observed Shabbos and go to their temples of Avodah Zarah, he says, and have special prayers and special sacrifices. There are those who have written divorce documents and a ksuba of support to support a wife who's divorced. There are those who practice yibum. And many halachos of ours that have shown up in the New World. And he says that various explorers report coming across white people with beards. Native Americans, the Indians, are not white, and he says never have beards. In the pictures, they never have beards. I don't know if that's really true, they never had beards. But he says the explorers report coming across white people with beards.
Did he get any sources?
Yes, he cites sources for everything from historical works of his time.
That they were practicing the pagan?
Yes, every Granira Grofia, one explorer he mentions, and he mentions, like I said, he cites the contemporary secular works of his time for these things. He said, I don't write anything if I don't know what I'm talking about. He doesn't make it up. He quotes many, many different works of people that, for the most part, we've never heard of.
It's not a contradiction that we don't have them anymore.
And maybe we do have them. We don't speak Spanish, and it's not, none of us here, as far as I know, specializes in exploration of America and has gone to the Library of Madrid to look for these works. Or Library of Amsterdam. The fact that we're not familiar with them doesn't mean they're not legitimate historical works or works of what people believed in those times to be legitimate history. Mm-hmm. He says, same idea that we mentioned yesterday in the name of the Maharal, that clearly it's Hashem's intention that they be hidden. So the fact that only rarely would explorers come across these people, and for the most part, we don't know where they are, and you can't just go out and find them. It's because clearly Hashem intends them to be hidden until the time comes for them to be revealed. Goes on, citing many, many works and many, many explorers and writers and historians. He says that there are large buildings in New Spain that the Indians claim have been there since the time of the creation. And they're such large buildings that they're built with tools that the Indians don't have. And clearly the Jews built these buildings because the Indians couldn't have built them. And since we know the Jews were there, because there were these white people with beards practicing these customs, that they must have built these buildings.
Can you tell me about like the Aztec temples or something like that?
He doesn't seem to be talking about that. He seems to be talking about residential buildings. And he says that some of the Indians say they've been there since the creation of the world, and some of the Indians swear that they were built by white men with beards. That's what he says. And then he says, as I mentioned, he says that since the 10 tribes were exiled in different waves, not all at one time, it would not be the least bit surprising that they ended up in different places all over the world. He then says, and some of the 10 tribes are in Ethiopia, and some of them are in Abyssinia, which is another name for Ethiopia. I guess in those days they were separate, but Abyssinia, I think, is what it's called. So that's consistent. And again, he cites historical works by people who encountered them. And clearly some of them are still living not far from the Euphrates River where they were exiled in the first place. And then there are very ancient traditions about the river Sambation, as he says, first mentioned in the Gemara Yerushalmi, which we read yesterday. And it also mentions a place called Antiochia. And he says that there are lots of places called Antiochia, so we don't know which one he's talking about, as I mentioned that yesterday as well. He says that in Portugal, there was somebody who had a glass, some kind of glass vessel, a cup or a bowl or something, that was claimed to have been made from sand collected from the Sambation River. And all of this glass bowl, 6 days a week, it was very cloudy. And on Shabbos, it was clear glass. Because just like the river itself is very turbid the entire week, but on Shabbos it rests, anything taken from it behaves the same way. So the glass made out of that sand also was not clear for 6 days a week, and on Shabbos it was very clear. And this person who had this thing showed it to a Muslim who got very upset because he said, this contradicts my faith and supports the Jewish faith, and it's not clear whether that person then broke it because he was so upset that it confirmed the Jewish Shabbos rather than the Muslim Shabbos. But that's the story that he says. Correct. They were there before the American Indians, and they left behind structures, and the Spanish explorers occasionally encountered them, but the fact that we don't continue to encounter them on a regular basis shouldn't surprise us, because it's Hashem's will that the 10 tribes be hidden until the time comes to reveal them. And when will that be and how will it happen? He says, this is hidden from every person. But we can divine a little bit from the works of the Nevi'im and from Chazal. And he describes Mashiach ben Yosef, who will bring back the 10 tribes before being killed in the war of Gog and Magog. And then Mashiach ben Yosef will come back in Tchias HaMesim and will be second to David HaMelech, which might be an explanation for what we said yesterday that we left as a question. Maral says about the tribes that will come back that they will still be, that they'll be set, they'll come back, but they'll be secondary. And Yitzi asked, and I had the same question, say, Bayoma hu Hashem echad u'shmo echad, Hashem will be one, and there will finally be unity among the Jewish people. Why are there people who are first and people who are second class? Perhaps, I looked again, Maral doesn't explain, didn't see any commentary on the Maral that addressed this. Perhaps what the Maral means by being secondary is that is the same idea that we saw before, that Mashiach ben Yosef will be second in command to the Mashiach ben David. That's perhaps that's all that it means. But first, before that will happen, when Mashiach ben Yosef is killed, the 10 tribes will realize that they were mistaken to rebel against the house of David in the first place, and everyone will accept the kingdom of Mashiach ben David. Goes on a little bit and talks furthermore about how the Geula will happen, which is, and about belief in the Geula, which is a subject that we will have other opportunities to address. Those are the highlights of the Sefer Mikveh Yisrael, and written in the 1600s by Rav Menashe Yisrael about the whereabouts of the 10 lost tribes. As with so many other things, like he says, you know, we don't know exactly where they are or how they will come back or when. And as we said many times, when it happens, it happens.
Is it possible that, let's say, Baranos went sooner from Spain in the 1400s and got there?
But that wouldn't be before the Indians.
Yeah, but I don't think those was before. It was after he's writing in the 1600s that there were people here, all seemingly here, established.
Yeah, established white people with beards. It's possible. It's not what he thinks. So he was closer to that time. I mean, if they went in secret, we wouldn't necessarily know. The first recorded Jews in the New World were, I believe, Portuguese Jews escaping from the Inquisition in Portugal. So, I mean, that's our knowledge of recorded history. He seems to be referring to explorers who found even more established communities and very large and in different places and very wealthy with structures that the Indians say have been there since creation. If these people built these structures, Indians would have known. Have a good day.